Did everybody get a copy of the manual, with the items and everything?
What you handed out last week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know why I'm saying I did. Sorry.
You're your sister's keeper.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that I got it.
You didn't get it?
Just the one. Sorry.
Can I borrow one today?
Or just one person didn't get it?
Can I borrow it? Can I borrow one?
You can actually have one if you want.
I have one, but I just...
Oh, you have one. Okay.
I kept it in another folder.
All right. And you... I sent you an electronic
one. I did.
Okay.
Should I have one in front of me as well? I feel like I probably should.
Well...
Okay, great. Mine's up here. Okay.
So you knew we were going to go over this today.
And of course,
but you left the manual at home.
Obviously.
Okay. We're off to a smashing start. So, this is the coding manual training, and I want to introduce somebody to you. Ariel Sherman, did I pronounce it correctly? Mm-hmm. Ariel Sherman is a doctoral student at the Yeshiva University Clinical Psychology Doctoral Program. And you are in what year?
I'm my second year in the school child clinical.
Oh, school child, okay. Mm-hmm. Second year.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going for your PsyD as well,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you guys have that in common? And because it's a PsyD program, I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
How would she not know? Oh, ours. Sorry, gotcha. Keep going.
I would hope she would know her own program. But I don't think she knows our program that well, since this is her first time on campus today.
Okay, I have to confess, I applied
here. Oh, did you really?
I did.
Did you what?
I
won't ask if you got in or not. Okay. So she's here because she is, I guess this is a dissertation project for you, right?
Yeah.
You want to say a little bit about it?
Sure. So my research advisor is Dr. Tracy Throut, who is the one who connected me to Dr. Brinman, and they're collaborating on a paper that has to do with the intervention that my advisor and two other people developed, called regulation focus
psychotherapy
for children, and it's a manualized time limited psychodynamic therapy for kids with disruptive behavior disorders, primarily ODD, and we are launching a small RCT this January.
Randomized controlled trial.
My hope for my research project, which I'm doing my lit search now, and I'm like in very early stages. I don't really know what my research question is, but basically I'm really excited about using the CPQ to learn more about what's going on in the therapy and finding out if it's what we think it is. And
okay, so you don't have specific hypotheses that you have formulated yet, but they're coming.
Not really on paper yet.
Are you allowed to say them just verbally, or?
Well, I can tell you like one thing. Well, what you're working on. I mean, my lab is very interesting. It's kind of paradoxical, right? To have like a time limited manualized psychodynamic treatment.
It's like military intelligence. What does that mean? Intelligent Donald Trump. What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, except I don't think that's a paradox. It doesn't work. we're very interested in whether how it fits into the like psychodynamic prototype versus the CBT prototype of the CBQ. So definitely one thing we'll be looking.
So are you going to be a co-author on this paper that we're working on, or no?
I am.
You are? Okay. I don't know. I don't even know the order of the authors yet, but we're working on this paper, and I just literally a couple of days ago finished the method and results sections of this paper, and we found some interesting results. The expected result was that RFPC, regulation focused psychotherapy for children is highly, highly correlated with the psychodynamic prototype, which I previously established 2 years ago in another paper. So that's no surprise. And also, it's correlated exactly zero to CBT prototype. It's significantly correlated, but not as high as psychodynamic. Yeah. But the mentalization prototype is actually highly correlated with pretty much everything, which lends itself to a hypothesis about its presence in all types of therapies, not just psychodynamic. So that's what Ariel's doing here. So she had approached me 2 months ago, a month ago. Yeah, feels to me like it was a long time ago. But she wanted to be trained on the CPQ, and I'd originally designed to do this training in January, but I felt our meetings were getting a little stagnant. We're talking about transcriptions. So I decided to move up the training. Also, looks like I'm going to be moving in January to Long Island. So,
excuse me?
Yeah. Well, you're allowed to move from Queens.
I know.
Well, Mac, you stayed in Queens.
I stayed in Queens.
You have to be closer to Carlin's school.
Okay.
Because she spends 2 hours a day in a car right now, which really isn't fair to her. I have a three-year-old who's at the Waldorf School in Garden City, and we live in Forest Hills, and it's almost an hour each way. And for have a three-year-old strapped in a car seat for almost 2 hours a day just seems inhumane. So, and she's going to be there for quite a while. They go up to grade 12. So we're moving to Lynbrook between semesters. And so I moved up the training so as not to conflict with our move. So it works, because I don't think we were talking about very much anyway in here otherwise. So I told Ariel, well, we're starting the training now, and she said, well, let me hop on this train before it pulls out of the station too far. So she's going to be joining us on Thursdays with the rest of you to learn this incredible coding system called the CPQ. And it ends with me giving you some reliability sessions to code. So hopefully we'll be done training by the end of the semester. Hoping for your sake as well as for everybody else that we can finish by then. We'll do some practice coding as well, both in vivo and at home. So that might influence the timetable of when people are going to finish transcribing. Everybody here is doing a separate study, transcribing interviews of children and caregivers in Uganda. I was in Uganda for 3 weeks doing a totally different study. And these interviews need to be transcribed in order to be coded. And so everybody in here is transcribing sessions. But they don't generate a lot of conversation during these meetings. So I thought I would teach them this while they're transcribing at home. But if they're going to be coding a session or two per week using the CPQ, then we'd have to reduce the workload for the transcribing, which would extend our date, which is okay. I'm all right with that. I can live with that. I'm okay with it. So, what I thought we would do today is actually review the items in great detail. How's that sound? And we could answer questions and talk about the items and how you might interpret them when looking at a session. Now, how many of you have actually been in a psychotherapy session with a patient?
Yes. Okay.
So you have Chani and Lily.
Like specifically psychodynamic or any?
No, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just unfortunately... Early CBT, so.
Unfortunately, wow, what a value judgment.
Well, I already know what my lead is. So. Okay. You can say that in here, but don't say it in front of other people.
Of course.
Okay,
not.
Just making sure you
never.
You certainly can say it in front of
other people. Yeah, it's, you know, we all try to get along, but know, sometimes our biases interfere with our ability to do that.
Yeah. So,
I think.
Yeah, it's, I think you have to be open-minded.
I think Julia's
too.
Advice is probably well taken. So, I've been here 17 years.
Very well.
Depends. But so, have you ever been in a psychotherapy session?
Not as a therapist.
Okay, so it's going to be harder for you to master this, not having been in a session. You know, I think it's. If you've actually done child therapy, it makes it easier to understand where these items are coming from and what it actually would look like in a session itself. I mean, have you observed sessions, either videotapes or live in vivo sessions or anything like that?
No, I did this summer. I did a group therapy.
For kids?
Kids like 0 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
Attachment-based mm-hmm. group therapy.
Where was I?
At Montefiore.
The Steels?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you know Miriam?
Loosely, I mean.
Loosely.
I know her. I don't know that she knows me.
Okay, that's a great program.
Yeah,
we had a
absolutely.
Student go there a couple of years ago on externship.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So, but it's quite different than an individual.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Were the parents that involved?
So the parents are there for it's two hours. Parents are there for the first half, and they have a group,
right.
a parent group, and
mm-hmm.
then
simultaneous.
Stay back with the children.
Okay. So, shall we launch into these discussion of these items? Similar to what we did with the CCQ last year. Everybody read the...
I think this is going to be a lot easier, though, because they have like paragraphs describing...
No, I know, but I think it's also, it can be also more difficult in some ways. We'll see. I'm hoping it's going to be easier. We trained last year on a different Q sort called the California Child Q-Sort, which is a personality-based Q-Sort developed by Jeannie Block, Jack Block's wife. Those names mean anything to you? Okay. This is a personality-based Q-Set, and we were the first to try to apply it to to psychotherapy sessions. And it still remains to be seen whether we'll be successful or not. We still have a few.
Looks good so far.
So far it does. We'll see.
Crazy new hypotheses.
No, some of them worked out. I think. There's nothing significant?
Well, there were significant things, but not that we had predicted.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
That's all right. No. Yeah, that's great. As long as there's something significant.
There were significant things. Don't you remember the most significant one?
You know, Julie, I have so many different projects going on.
Yeah.
Julie's my project coordinator, so she's a second year student. You're the senior person in here.
I know.
It's incredible.
Right. Thank you, Jeff.
No, usually there's a third or a fourth year in here, but they all moved up, and so you're the senior person. Really quite impressive. Okay. So, did you guys review these items for today? Now, we could just go chronological order, or we could like focus on particular items that you had trouble interpreting or understanding. How would you like to proceed?
I had a procedural
Yes,
question.
Please. Now, you were able to open up that podcast?
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, and that helped?
Super, yeah.
Okay.
So I feel like I understand the cue sorting process.
Yep.
More so, are we watching the whole session and then based on our memory doing the cue sort?
No.
Well, you don't have to do it based on memory. You can refer back to the session as often as you want to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So you're like moving back and forth.
Well, I would recommend, these are great questions, by the way. I would recommend looking at the entire session and then going back through it, you know, looking at it again, maybe taking some notes. And then when you're actually cue sorting, you did some of this too last year. you correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of hard. I mean, the way I cue sort, I mean, I use a table like this size, and I spread all the items out on the table, and it's hard to like look at a little bit of session and then do some cue sorting and look at a little bit. It doesn't seem to work. What I'm saying is that you're not prohibited from looking at the session while you're cue sorting. I wouldn't recommend it simply because it's just logistically it would be very difficult to do that.
I take like copious notes. And then not all of us have a table this big. Some of us do on our floor.
Floors are good. Floors are good.
But I'll have like the notes right next to me. And I'll just like, and I do it right, I cue sort of right after I watch it.
Yeah.
If you wait like a little while, it's just your reliability goes down.
Totally. So those are my suggestions.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
My concern was about like watching the whole thing and then like it's a long time to remember.
You'll be able to remember if you do the sort right away.
Okay.
Because like salient things will stay.
And also taking notes.
Yeah.
And what I hope will happen is that you'll sort of memorize these items. Like they become ingrained in you, and then you start looking at the video thinking of the items. And so, oh, this happened. Oh, this is item 42. I have to remember to put that in a 7, 8, or 9 pile when I start do my sort. You know, that kind of a thing. I mean, maybe you could talk a little bit about the types of notes you take when you
like,
view a video.
I'll write down a lot, like what the child and therapist like say to each other, and then also just like interactions, like all you know, like if the child is like turned away, or is like super responsive. I'm thinking about the CCQ
right
now.
I know.
I'm thinking of like I know those items really well. So like when I was doing it the other day, like I was watching this child and I was like has unusual ways of thinking about things, and that's just like one of the items, and I was like made a mental note to put that in a pile 9, you know, and like. I think once you get to know the items better, you'll also sort of know what to take notes on.
Would you concur, Anna?
I agree.
You're the other person who has actually done... Well, actually, all you guys have done some cue sorting in my class,
mm-hmm.
too. But
yeah, but
you're not looking at psychotherapy sessions. You're actually... They're cue sorting, or
No,
they're actually cue sorting chapters from a book called
The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog.
This is developmental psych.
Oh, right.
That's interesting.
Right.
And then you would read it and then cue sort it.
Yeah.
It's interesting that not all of the topics are covered, so you kind of have to imagine what would look like in that child.
Which is all you have.
Yeah.
You extrapolate.
Yeah. Here we don't want you to extrapolate. This is like for research
purposes. Yeah, I was
about
to say, don't do that here.
Yeah, don't do that here.
Face value.
No, you definitely can do that for the class assignment because you're not given enough information. But here, if you run into that, you know, they go in the middle piles. All right, items that are not applicable. So, Ariel, are you familiar with how cue sorts work in general? And okay, all right. So, Raquel's the only one who wasn't familiar with cue sorting, but you listened to my podcast and you read the intro.
Good to go.
What?
I'm good to go.
You're good to go. Okay. And you know the little tricks of the trade now. And okay. So, and you read this part. The beginning of the manual. Okay, so you're fine. So I guess we can either talk about specific items that you had questions about, or I could just go chronologically through every single item. What do you guys want to do? What's your pleasure? Don't all hit me at once with suggestions.
I was going to say maybe chronological, because maybe you have something to say that we haven't thought of on a particular item.
Okay.
I agree.
Me too. Okay. Now you want to go through each item because you want to hear what I have to say about each item, or you haven't looked through the items?
No, I have. I have looked through the items, but I
haven't looked through. And there might be a discussion that can be brought up about that.
Well, and if there's nothing
then we skip the item.
Yeah, if nothing comes up for anyone, then we don't have to talk
about it. Why don't you like read out the items and then if people have comments or whatever, then we can talk about it. But if it's pretty well understood, we can move on.
Okay. Child expresses negative feelings, for example, criticism, hostility toward therapist, versus expresses approval or admiration. Place toward characteristic direction of child expresses criticism of the therapist or feelings of dislike, scorn, anger, or antagonism. I had a six-year-old once punch me in the eye in a session. So he'd get a 9 on this item for that session. For example, child attributes undesirable traits to the therapist, saying that the therapist is ugly, mean, stupid, or kicks therapist. So, place toward uncharacteristic direction of child expresses positive or friendly feelings toward therapist. For example, expresses love or affection for the therapist. Questions about that one?
I thought there was another one that talked specifically about like aggressive behavior toward the therapist.
Yeah, you're right. You're
so,
right.
So yeah,
the one that I just mentioned, it wouldn't be so appropriate for item where you're
going
for that.
No, but your point is valid because of the fact that it literally lists or kicks therapists. So that's why it's confusing to me. Because this to me would be, I would think that you would be characterizing here negative feelings, comments, etc., and not a physical action, you know, and that would be the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah, child makes physical contact with the therapist is another one. So
which item is that?
They're not mutually exclusive. Like in a case like that, 15? Like where the child would kick the therapist, I think both items would be rated very high.
I know that's a negative thing to do, but they're not necessarily expressing negative feelings. Like that might not be accompanied by saying negative things to you.
Yeah, but it just says expressing negative feelings. It doesn't say saying negative feelings. I can express my negative feelings in a lot of
And she has.
Verbal ways. Oh my God! Shut up, Deb. Okay, that was verbal. I will. But you know, like if a child, you know, a child who might not want to speak a lot might like hit at the therapist or do that. I think that's pretty expressive of some negative feelings.
So maybe kicking would mean that items 1 and 15 would both go in higher piles.
Yes. So if there's overlap, you can rate the same behavior in more than one category.
Yes. But each item was designed to have no complete conceptual overlap with any other item. These items should be able, theoretically, to be able to be rated on each anchor point of the scale from 1 to 9. And theoretically, every item, if an item goes in pile 1, every other item should be able to go in pile 9. You know what I'm saying? Like
there's no difference between them.
Yes, there's a conceptual distinction among all these items. Otherwise, they're just duplicates of each other and we should just throw away an item. But this instrument was very carefully constructed by Celeste Schneider at UC Berkeley, and she worked with Enrico Jones, who created the adult version, the original version of this instrument.
Like, I was just thinking, like, with a really dysregulated child that was sort of disorganized, you might see the child laughing and having a good time and still hitting the therapist. So, you know, that would be like high on aggression but low on this one.
That's my thought. I love you so much. Bam!
It's just always like jump to the most extreme examples.
Because they're the most instructive, aren't they?
Sometimes.
Sometimes they are.
Along those lines, I'm wondering, so it's an extreme example, punching therapist, but if there's just one punch thrown in the whole session, does that make it characteristic? I guess I'm trying to drill down into characteristics.
Yeah, you know, I hear you. So in a lot of these items, it's the frequency in a way, like how often does it occur in the session?
Right.
But punching, like I just thinking about the session I'm talking about, this happened like over 10 years ago, but it's a session that made a big impression on me and my eye. you know, that defined the session. That it happened, I think, pretty much in the middle of the session. And, you know, that session actually defined sessions following it as well. The fact that I don't remember anything else that happened in that session. I do remember that punch. It's a salient, huh?
Nothing. We didn't just say the same word at the same time.
Did you say salient?
Yep.
Oh my God.
Leave me alone.
So I think this is
not good for it.
I think this is sort of what we were talking about last time, is that like that it's characteristic to the particular session and not necessarily characteristic to the child, the therapist, or their relationship over time.
Correct. You were just Q-sorting the session in front of you. You're not Q-sorting anything else. In fact, you know, I was talking about this very issue with Celeste a few years ago. You know, ideally, what you'd want is you'd have these trained pairs of coders, and each pair of coders would code only one session. Why do I say that? Because if you're coding multiple sessions, how easy is it for you to be influenced by previous sessions you've seen? Who said that? Oh.
I mean, you definitely shouldn't code them in order.
Like, No. Wait, believe me. Still. When I published on this instrument in previous studies, we always assign the sessions in random, completely random order, as we did last year with the
so
CCQ
hard.
Study.
You know, we would be watching and be like, well, in last session he did this, so, and then like Jeff would be like, no.
Yeah, it's so easy to fall into that. Oh, this is what this kid always does in these sessions, so clearly,
it's
you know, it's what he's doing now. And, oh, this kid clearly has such and such diagnosis. Well, diagnoses don't change, so sure, use every fiber in your moral being to stop yourself from doing that.
So maybe this is like too like nitty gritty, but if there's reference,
there's never too much nitty gritty.
All right. If there's reference to something that occurred in a previous session made by the therapist or the child,
you don't know anything about the previous session, even if you've coded it previously.
Right, but let's say the therapist says, so last week you were really angry and like you hit me or whatever.
Right.
Would you code that as being part of that session or because of
No, I wouldn't code it at all because child expresses negative feelings. There's no negative feelings being expressed when the therapist brings up something that happened in a previous session.
Okay.
You would code it as the child.
Yeah, you
like,
bastard.
Oh,
you're
yeah,
right. I'm going to do it again.
Yeah, that's what you would code. There might be some item on here that's like therapist directly communicates to child something, and that might be characteristic of that interaction.
Could be.
But,
yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I'm also thinking about the related to the question of frequency, that because you're forced into the normal distribution, everything
mm-hmm.
is relative
to everything else.
Within that
yes,
so.
Right. Yeah, it's really important because, you know, something might happen a lot, but let's say I'm in a session, I'm scratching my head, and I do it constantly. It happens a lot, but it's not really salient to what's going on in the therapy. Now, if the patient brings up, hey, you keep scratching your head, what the hell is going on with you? You know, you got lice, what's going on? You know, then you can code it under something else if it becomes a salient part of the session. But frequency doesn't always mean salience. And if it happens one time, only one time, that doesn't always mean it's irrelevant. The punch happened one time to me, but that was very relevant, very salient to the session. So frequency and relevance, there's probably a correlation there, positive correlation, but it's not one.
Mm-hmm.
But neither is it zero. So keep that in mind. All right?
Yeah.
Any other questions about that particular issue? And we talked already about 5 versus 1. We did that last week. By the way, this is for Ariel, but for everybody. Last week, I formally started the training. So I podcasted it, and if you go to my website, the podcast is up there. It's www.drjeffgoodman.com. And you go, there's a menu bar at the top. You click on more. And CPQ coding team appears, And if you click on that, you'll scroll down and you look at, there are several different buttons. And the first one for this year anyways, October 13th, 2016. Click on that and the podcast will immediately start playing.
Okay.
All right. So the 5 verses 1, do you remember what we talked about last week about that? Anybody?
Gina. Yeah, like if one of these items just doesn't come up at all, it's like 5.
Okay.
Versus if it does come up, and if a child does something and you just ignore it, then it would be 1.
Right.
You know, vice versa, if you do something the child ignores it, whatever.
Right. Right. So I think the example I gave was for sexual.
Right, right. Or the child wetting their pants, I think was the example you gave as well.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Right. So if child wets their pants, I don't say anything about it. It's very, very uncharacteristic. He goes in a pile 1, maybe 2, but not 5, because the evidence is there that something should have been mentioned
right.
about it. That's an important rule because that'll help with the reliability a lot, if you can remember that rule, the 5 verses 1 rule. Therapist comments on the child's nonverbal behavior. For example, body posture, gesture, place toward characteristic direction. If therapist draws attention to child's nonverbal behavior, such as facial expressions, blushes, body movements, exclude child's play. For example, therapist remarks that the child is spinning around and around in circles. Therapist notes child's twiddling fingers. Place toward uncharacteristic direction if there is little or no focus on obvious, repetitive, or problematic nonverbal behavior.
Well, that's an important distinction. It says on problematic nonverbal behavior. So if...
Well, obvious, repetitive, or problematic.
Oh, you're right. The or is there. Okay. Good catch.
Or. You called that on Angel last week. One of the items.
With an or.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when it gets tricky.
Any questions about that one? Okay. Therapist remarks are aimed at encouraging child speech. Placed toward characteristic direction, therapist encourages child to express herself verbally. This refers to remarks aimed at eliciting verbalizations and not simply to general exploratory comments and questions. The therapist might encourage the child to talk rather than act, or ask, can you talk about that? Encourage the child to describe difficult thoughts or ideas. For example, a therapist encourages a child who's afraid of the dark to say to herself, I'm a brave girl. I can take care of myself in the dark. She's calling that encouragement. I think there's another term for that in CBT. Is it modeling? I don't know.
It would be modeling to say, like, you can say this and it will make you feel better.
Right.
But I don't know.
It's sort of modeling, I guess. Somebody raised their hand over here.
Hey. Yes. So there's another one that I noticed that's about 97, is that the therapist emphasizes verbalization of internal states and affects. So if, like, I guess it would be 3 if it's just something not relating to internal, or she's asking her to verbalize about, like, surface level things.
Or just talk. Can you talk? Or, you know, that sounds really interesting. What about that?
Okay. Those two items could be correlated as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Because I just feel
but they're
like
not
they're,
the same item.
Right. But there are so many that have, like, minor overlap that I feel like I'm not sure that I'll have much in the middle that I can just easily throw. I mean, maybe.
Will.
Right, yeah. I don't have no idea. Right.
That's always my problem. I have so many things in the middle piles.
Yeah.
Well, you remember what I said about that? This is in the first day of class, and she heard that lecture. Raquel heard that lecture. You know, when you're going through the first time through the items, the middle piles should be about twice as large as the outer piles. You familiar with that rule?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when you go through all the items the first time, roughly twice as many items go in the middle pile as the left and right piles, because ultimately you want a distribution where there are 50 items in piles 4, 5, and 6, 25 items in piles 1, 2, and 3, and 25 items in piles 7, 8, and 9. It has this nice, beautiful shape of a bell.
Yeah, it's not a normal curve.
It is. Number 4, there's a discussion of why a child is in therapy. And this item is usually coded pretty accurately. If there's talk about why the child is in therapy, for example, the child asks if the patient understands why he was brought into therapy or discusses therapeutic goals. Place sort of uncharacteristic direction if there's no reference or allusion to the reasons for therapy by either therapist or child. For example, child queries therapist regarding why he must continue sessions, and therapist does not respond with specific reasons as to why child is there. You see, that's the 5-1 rule, right? The child is begging, is clamoring after reasons or, you know, the purpose. What am I doing here? And the therapist doesn't respond or maybe changes the subject, right? Now, let's say that there's no one brings up anything about goals or the reasons for therapy. Then what pile does it go in?
Pile 5.
Pile 5, right. Okay. Item 5, child has difficulty understanding the therapist's comments. Place toward characteristic direction if child seems confused or fails to understand therapist's comments. Now, you know, this is a little bit of a subjective item. You might just get a sense. We want to try to base it in reality as much as possible. So maybe nonverbal cues might be your entree into this item. Or the child might just say, I don't get it. But not very often are kids articulate. This may be the result of therapist's lack of clarity or a defensive response by the child. For example, the child asks what, or otherwise indicates that she doesn't know what the therapist means. Place toward uncharacteristic direction if child readily demonstrates comprehension of therapist's comments. Questions on that? You with us, Sarah?
Yeah. I'm checking for reliability measures on this and see what it was compared to.
On this instrument, Celeste Schneider's dissertation, 2004.
Okay. I'm just curious about different populations that we would apply. I'm still with you, but checking and sketching.
All right. I've made eye contact with you all meeting, and so I just want to make sure you're with me.
I'm with you.
All right. Number 6, therapist is sensitive to the child's feelings. Again, this is one that's more subjective. It's sometimes hard to get a sense of whether the therapist is being sensitive. Partly you have to rely on your own sensitivity regarding whether the therapist is being sensitive or not. Place toward characteristics. That's why it's important, I think, for a lot of us to have had the experience of having done therapy. I'm hoping that everybody knows what sensitivity is, and nobody needs sensitivity training in here. And so you'll get that sense of what a sensitive therapist might look like. Place toward characteristic direction if therapist is sensitive to the child's feelings and can communicate this understanding in a way that seems attuned to the child. That means kind of with the child, responsive to the child, right? For example, a therapist makes a statement that indicates an understanding of how the child felt in a certain situation. Now, if I had presence of mind, I would have told this kid who punched me, geez, I think you might be feeling angry with me right now.
You didn't say that.
No, I didn't. I was pissed. He was 6 years old. It didn't matter. I was pissed. Place toward uncharacteristic direction if therapist does not respond to child in a way that conveys attunement. For example, child shyness is criticized by therapist as avoidance. So if you get a sense, if the child is being shy, which is hard to get, right? Because remember, you're supposed to put out of your mind all the other sessions you've watched, right? You're just watching the session in front of you, and this kid seems shy, but then the therapist says, you know, you're just avoiding what I want to talk about with you today. You're avoiding the goals of treatment. You know, that would be an insensitive remark by the therapist, and that would get a high characteristic rating on this item. Yes, Chanya.
That's actually really difficult, because I think if, for example, I was watching you doing this, I just assume that you knew that the child was being avoided rather than just being shy. So, like, how would we make that distinction, you know? Like, how do we know when to know?
Well, first of all, I'm not the therapist in the videos you're going to be.
I'm using an example.
No, I'm not. So what I'm saying is that the therapist who's going to be doing this is going to be making mistakes. And here, well, there's more than just one.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I always forget that part.
Yeah. Also, we have the other case.
The current one?
No.
The current?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about actually a total of four different therapists.
So how do we make the distinction between the therapist, you know, like...
Because some, like...
Yeah,
like... different and expresses... I know what you mean.
I guess
don't assume that the therapist... What I'm trying to say is don't assume the therapist knows what they're doing.
Okay.
These are student therapists who sometimes know what they're doing. I'm sorry.
I'm with you on this. I
so
feel like I don't know what I'm doing.
Like, for example, maybe like every session is the first step. Like,
yes.
Every session is like an intake. So we assume that the therapist knows the child as much as we know the child.
Also, just
is
like,
that like
it's
a good
safe
way?
To,
yep.
like, not make assumptions as well. You know, it's like...
Just block out...
Face value.
Everything else and just focus on those 45 minutes in front of you.
Mm-hmm. It'll be easier once we, like, experience one.
Yeah.
If we're thinking of all these hypotheticals now. I mean,
it might be
I'm
really
doing
confusing
it
at first.
Yeah,
I think it's important that we go through the items first.
No, yeah, for sure. But I'm
but
like,
look, as soon as I can,
put it
as soon as I feel we're ready, I'm going to give you guys all.
Oh, no, we're not ready yet. We're sure. I wasn't implying that we were ready, but.
I thought you went to one tomorrow to code.
No.
I think you're right. Like, once we see it, like, all of this will become a little bit more clear, you know? Like, it'll put it into
like the distinction between two items that may seem related.
Yeah.
It may seem a little clearer.
Yeah.
I mean, what you can do is go to YouTube, type in child therapy or something, and you'll find stuff online, and you can look at that and then think about what you're seeing and apply. I don't want to give you actual formal real sessions yet.
Right.
But you're certainly welcome to look at YouTube sessions. All right. Child is anxious and tense versus calm and relaxed. Again, you know, you're looking at actual behaviors as well as, you know, patient saying I'm anxious. Child exhibits tension, anxiety, or worry. This may be demonstrated in either speech or play. For example, child appears halting and timid. Place toward uncharacteristic direction if child appears calm or relaxed or conveys a sense of ease, even while addressing uncomfortable topics. So there, to get into like a one or a two, you'd have to see the child under pressure and handling it as cool as a cucumber. So for example, you know, I'm thinking of Leon a little bit in our class, right? So, you know, why did you slash that girl in the face? I mean, she's getting stitches for that. Yeah, you know, I just have something to do. You know, I didn't really.
What are you talking about?
Huh?
It's fairly
good. The boy who was raised as a dog.
Yeah, okay.
You should read it.
Okay.
It's great.
I'll listen to it while we drive.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
yeah, you can get a Audible book. It's an Audible book. Or is it Kindle? What?
Oh, okay. No, thank you.
No, it's great. It doesn't get bogged down in like heavy words or anything like that. But I was just making a reference to one of the chapters.
Yeah, I was like, wow, you assigned them a heavy book for their first semester.
So that would be a situation where that kid would get like a one or a two.
So this is specifically referencing like there would have to be some sort of like situation that would provoke that you would think would provoke anxiety and how they would respond to it. This is not talking about if you have a child that has an anxiety disorder, they are going to be anxious all the time. They're going to present that. So is that not taking that into account? This is like
you're not taking anything into account but what you see.
So if there's a child that you're not going to know first, the whole time.
A, you're not going to know the diagnosis of the child.
Okay.
You're going to be blind to that.
Right, but
okay.
I'm saying this.
Yeah, I'm disagreeing with you though on that.
I'm actually.
Wait, let her talk.
Yeah, there's nothing to agree with.
I don't think it's a question. I know what you're asking, and I think if the child is visibly anxious the whole time, then that would go in a high pile.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, so the item is not.
If it quacks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
So it's not. So because I was saying that the example that you just gave made me think that this was saying there would have to be like some sort of situation that would you would think would provoke anxiety, and whether the child was responding with anxiety or not.
No, only if you're. I'm only bringing up if you put it in an very uncharacteristic one or two.
Okay.
You know, you have to have that stimulus.
Okay.
And the child is still cool as a cucumber in spite of the stimulus, then it has to be a one or a two, right?
Yes.
So I brought up an example in which most kids being accused of slashing somebody in the face would be very rattled by an adult accusing them of that.
Right.
But Leon would sit back and he'd say, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, and, I understand what you're saying.
And what's the big deal? She had it coming to her, right? You know.
As opposed to, so if, like, you had not brought up slashing of the face or anything of that nature, and Leon was just calm and relaxed the whole time, then something like this would go in, like, the five pile.
If you didn't bring up.
Right.
Yes.
Okay,
right.
That makes sense.
Or four, something like
right.
that. Right.
But not really end up in a
I mean, look at Donald Trump last night. You know, like, you sexually assaulted women. I didn't know. There's no anxiety, right? He didn't.
Right,
he wasn't fidgeting. He wasn't true to the sociopath that he is, right? He handled it very nicely, right? Child is curious. Placed toward characteristic direction if child exhibits curiosity or interest in surroundings, such as interest in toys in the room, or the thoughts, feelings, or behaviors of others, including the therapists. It's a very broad item. Curiosity is very broadly defined here. Child asks numerous questions about other children under the therapist's care. In my private practice, it's very rare for a kid to ask about other kids, but I don't have other kids' drawings up on the walls like a lot of therapists do for that reason.
The little boy that they'll be watching, he did, and one of his was like, I think another child in here moved my toy. Did you see that? Was that yours? I thought
so
that. You know who I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
I know who you're talking
about.
Placed toward uncharacteristic direction if child does not seem curious, for example, child lacks interest in surroundings or understanding something or someone better. Okay? And it would go in a very uncharacteristic pile if, let's say, the therapist brought in, it was Halloween, and the therapist came in a monster costume. And look, I'm dressed up for Halloween. And he says, okay. No curiosity about the costume or why the therapist is dressed up. It's coming off the top of my head. Therapist is non-responsive versus affectively engaged. Again, this is an item that is more subjective. You just have to get a sense about what this therapist is doing and how this therapist is responding to this kid. It's characteristic of the therapist's stance toward the child is cool, formal, detached, marked by emotional retreat or withdrawal. Uncharacteristic if therapist is responsive, affectively involved during interactions with the child. That doesn't necessarily mean that the therapist is crying, because the patient's, you know, describing a sad story, but, you know, just engaged with the child and the material. Any questions about that one?
I have another general question.
Yes.
So if the therapist or the child, for any item, if there really is like, if it does seem neutral that they're fluctuating between both and it doesn't lean either way, that would go into pile five along with things that don't come up. But there's no way, like when you're looking at the data, there's no way to differentiate between like what came up equal amounts of times and what is unimportant.
Right.
So is that just that information just falls to the wayside?
Well, it cancels each other out.
Right.
In this methodology. Yeah. Child seeks greater intimacy with the therapist. Characteristic: if child appears to wish for a more intimate relationship, for example, child expresses concern about the therapist, expresses a wish to see the therapist more often, seeks greater physical closeness by sitting close to or hugging the therapist. Uncharacteristic: if child remains distant or avoids greater intimacy or closeness. I think this item is pretty easily defined and coded. Right. Item 11, sexual feelings or thoughts emerge. Characteristic: if the child's sexual ideas, wishes, or fantasies are discussed, expressed in play or behavior. Play or behavior, right? So it doesn't have to be only verbal mention. Uncharacteristic direction: if child does not express sexual ideas or feelings, or if thoughts, sexual thoughts seem to be avoided or suppressed.
So this does not follow the same rule. Right?
Yeah, it should.
But it says, place toward uncharacteristic if the child does not express sexual ideas or feelings.
Right. Or if sexual thoughts seem to be avoided or suppressed.
But that's what I'm saying. It's an or. So if the whole session goes by and they don't express sexual ideas or feelings, they're saying put it in the uncharacteristic.
No, I would put it in five.
Okay, that's a good distinction.
So we're making that rule. All right, we'll put that in five. And if, let's say, a kid sits on the therapist's lap and starts rubbing up against the therapist's lap, that's a one. And the therapist doesn't mention anything about it, that's a one. And the patient doesn't say anything about it. Yeah.
But it says, or expressed in player behavior, then it would be very characteristic.
But it's avoided. See, sexual feelings or thoughts emerge, that's emerge in the session. And it emerged, but the therapist isn't bringing it up.
That's very,
it's not being addressed.
Because
it makes a big difference.
It doesn't. It doesn't
specify that. Is that?
We're specifying.
That was my question. Yeah. We're specifying.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an item that so seldom comes up in child.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an item in the adult Q-sort, the PQS, that's very similar. It's sexual. Was it sexual feelings or disgust? And that item comes up with fair regularity, right? Especially in psychodynamic sessions. But in child sessions, this item doesn't come up very often. And now that there's an adolescent psychotherapy process Q set, the APQ. And so the APQ is where you might see this item. But for child, unless they were sexually abused, you know, you really don't see this item coming up. So hopefully it's going to go in pile five an awful lot. But if the child is making some kind of bid by like sitting on the therapist's lap and there's a sexual tinge to it, but the therapist doesn't say anything about it, and it just seems weird or off, I put it in pile one.
And if the therapist brings up like a sexual feeling or thought,
Then you have to think about it being characteristic of the session.
Okay, but if the therapist brings it up, like, and the child ignores it, you know, would that come as zero or what? You know, like if they're talking about like a trauma history or something like that, and so the, you know, in that case that the therapist brings it up, not that it's inappropriate or anything, you know, and the child ignores it, would that be?
Well, if the child ignores it, then it's still he or she's avoiding it, and still be uncharacteristic. But if they both talk about it, then it goes in a characteristic pile.
No, I just wanted to make sure. that it's all on the child's end in this one.
Therapist models unspoken or unelaborate.
I'm not leaving.
Therapist models unspoken or unelaborated emotions. Characteristic: if therapist uses own affect and emotional tone when addressing the child's emotional states, for example, when the child describes burying a beloved pet without feeling, the therapist says sadly, "That makes me really upset. I feel like crying." Don't say that in a therapy session.
No, they
said. All right. Or uncharacteristic: if therapist responds to child's unspoken or unelaborated emotions with ideational or explanatory statements. For example, when child discusses loss of a pet without affect, therapist says, "I think you're sad." Or I might say something like, "Maybe you're trying to protect yourself from feeling sad."
So that I can say.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Soak it all up. Session
of 15
minutes. He's also my supervisor.
So. Yeah, we have multiple roles here.
So many.
Child is animated or excited. Characteristic: if child appears excited or aroused in some way, for example, child becomes animated and talkative in response to therapist comment. Uncharacteristic: if child appears bored, dull, lifeless, subdued. For example, when therapist greets child, he shrugs his shoulders and sluggishly sits and stares. Let's hope that's not going to happen to you
that's
today.
Fine.
Any questions about that one? Nope. 14, physical symptoms or health are discussed. Characteristic of discussion emphasizes somatic concerns or physical symptoms. For example, child may complain of fatigue or of having headaches, stomach aches, and the like. This is a fairly easily defining and rated item. Uncharacteristic if child exhibits somatic distress but does not present it for discussion. So it comes in. Doesn't talk about what he's doing, and the therapist doesn't bring it up either. That would be a one or a two.
Also, like in one of the sessions with the little boy, he just leaves the room, and you don't really know why. And when he comes back, the therapist is like, where did you go? And he was like, the bathroom, and then no discussion about it. He just wouldn't talk about it. And I would say that some physical symptoms are there, but they do not talk about it.
So maybe a two, maybe a three. Because
mm-hmm.
He didn't say bathroom, but...
He did say bathroom.
I said, yeah, but he said bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like
so
he said...
So it wouldn't be a one. Yeah, he didn't.
Right.
It's not like he said to the waiting room.
Right.
But yeah, then there's the... Item 16, there's discussion or evidence of bodily functions. So that would be like... For example, a child asks to be excused to use the restroom twice, and the therapist does not address. Oh, no, but I guess what you were saying, the therapist did address it.
Yeah.
The child
didn't.
He didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah. Child makes physical contact with the therapist. Characteristic of child touches the therapist, rubs against, tugs, pushes, kicks. So any kind of physical contact. Now the question is, how salient is that contact for the session? So, I've had patients lean into me while we're working on a puzzle or something together, and it just doesn't seem like it's not really what's going on in the session. At other times, it feels very salient because, what they're talking about is feeling very close to me. So then I connect what they're doing with what they're saying, and it becomes more salient then for me. Uncharacteristic of child keeps a physical distance from therapist. For example, child pulls back as therapist approaches. There was a kid that we rated last year, practice, where she crawled under a table in the office and wouldn't come out for the entire session. You remember, did you look at that one?
I did not see that one, but I remember you telling me about it.
Yeah. So that would be, this one go in a pile one, that particular session decided would go there. Have a good time.
I have anxiety on the walk over. It's okay. All right, bye guys. Have a good weekend.
See ya. 16, there's discussion or evidence of bodily functions, for example, bowel movements, characteristic if there's a discussion or enactment through play of bodily functions. Bodily functions may include micturition, bowel movements, or function of sexual organs. Uncharacteristic if discussion of body functions actively avoided. Not discussed when this topic emerges in player behavior. For example, a child has to be excused to use the restroom twice during the hour, and a therapist doesn't address this event. So there's the opportunity to talk about it, and the therapist passes it up. That's very uncharacteristic.
So in the thing where the example we were just talking about the kid that gets up and leaves and comes back, and the kid doesn't want to discuss it, where does that go? Is it characteristic because it happened and the therapist addressed it, or is it uncharacteristic because the child doesn't want to discuss it, even though the therapist is trying to discuss it?
Either way. See, the item is, there is a discussion. There is a discussion. So if one member of the dyad is avoiding that discussion, then it's uncharacteristic.
Okay.
Unless it's an item that explicitly says that.
Yes. Right. Exactly. Okay, so for the time. But there is discussion. That means it takes two people to make a discussion. So.
So even if a kid is perseverating about some specific topic, it keeps on coming up, unless the therapist engages with it, and unless it's an item that's specifically about the child's behavior, then it's uncharacteristic.
Right. It's not going to happen that often.
Yeah.
But it happens like occasionally. Like if a patient is bringing up something over and over and over again, any therapist is going to, respond, right? Unless I guess they're doing like an extinction where they're trying to extinguish a particular behavior by not responding to it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's possible.
Like more of a measure of like therapist behavior than...
What, this?
Yeah. The measure as a whole.
You think so?
Yeah.
Only a third of the items are exclusively therapist-based.
I guess like how we're defining it puts the sort of locus of control with the therapist. It's like if it's acknowledged by the therapist, then it becomes characteristic. Almost ceases to exist as characteristic.
How about child who's anxious?
Right, but weren't you saying that... So to go back to the example that we used from last week, if the child pees, it is uncharacteristic of the session unless the therapist acknowledges it. That places...
Let's say the therapist peed his pants.
I would also say that that...
And the child didn't bring it up. That's also uncharacteristic. It's a dyadic instrument.
Yeah.
It's a two-person psychology instrument. So if the therapist peed his pants and the child didn't say anything but was looking right at the mess and didn't say anything, it's also uncharacteristic. So it's not therapist biased. I think it's equal.
So it's not dependent. So like you said, so it's like a third child, a third therapist, and like a third dyadic.
Yes.
But
exactly.
But the way you're speaking about it now, it kind of makes it sound like we should be viewing all of them as all items.
Not all of them. Child is anxious. Let's go back to child is anxious, for example. Item 7. That's an item that's strictly child-focused. It's not dependent upon the therapist necessarily. Now, the therapist could say something anxiety-provoking, and if the child still acts like no anxiety, then it would get a lower. So even that one, yeah, there is some role that the therapist could play in the placement of this item. But in general, child is anxious. You know what an anxious kid looks like. And the kid's going to be anxious depending upon the behaviors that you observe in the session. But I am going to continue to say that if a child, if a therapist says, you know, I just spoke to your dad and he's going to whip you with the belt after the session. The therapist says, or the patient says, oh, okay. So the therapist is I'm just, you know, making this stuff up, but the therapist is presenting an anxiety-provoking situation for this patient, and the patient still reacts with no anxiety. You have to put that low, really low, as opposed to a therapist not making any anxiety-provoking comments, and the patient acts the same way as in my first example. I would think that the placement of the item would need to be lower in the presence of a anxiety-provoking stimulus with the same behavior. So you have two. This is why it is an interactional instrument, right? So the same kid acting exactly the same way, same low level of anxiety, in one case gets a lower score than the other. Why? Because in the one case, the child was presented with an anxiety-provoking stimulus, namely the therapist saying something provocative, provocative for anxiety. In the other case, the therapist wasn't making a statement that was provocative in anxiety, you know, creating anxiety. The response might be identical, but your placement of the item wouldn't be identical because of the context. This is a very context-dependent instrument. And it's designed really to define and identify interaction structures. You read about that whole literature and Enrico Jones's idea of interaction structures, and he created this instrument, or the adult version of it anyway, and this is just really a modification of that. He created that instrument to be able to conduct factor analyses that would allow you to identify different patterns of interactions between the therapist and the patient across sessions. And so he defined and he created these items to accomplish that goal. So every item has some kind of context surrounding it. It's not context, none of these items is context independent. Some are a little bit more context independent than others. Like child is anxious, but even in that case, a therapist could manipulate the context so that a child could be more or less anxious in that setting. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Lily, does that help?
All right.
So it's not, I wouldn't call it therapist focused. I wouldn't call it patient focused. I call it dyadic focused, because that was the intention of the author of this instrument, to make it dyadic focused. And so a third of the items are child focused, a third are therapist focused, and a third are explicitly dyadic focused. But they all, you know, have dyadic elements in them because it's a two-person model. The theory behind the item construction was that there are two people who exist in the session, the patient and the therapist, and they dyadically form these patterns of interaction with each other. That's new, fairly new. I'd say 40 years ago, psychoanalysis wasn't thinking that way. You had a patient who was projecting all of their wishes, anxieties, fears, you know, everything onto the therapist, and then the therapist would make interpretations, and that was called the blank screen approach. I don't know if you've heard of that term, blank screen. And more recently, contemporary psychodynamic therapists have understood the blank screen to be really a fallacy. There is no such thing as a blank screen. The therapist is always exerting, consciously or unconsciously, an influence on the patient's feelings, attitudes, beliefs, behaviors, right? So there is no such thing as a blank screen anymore. It's all mixed up. It's very intersubjective. And so Enrico Jones, being a more forward-thinking, progressive, contemporary psychodynamic theoretician and researcher, decided to construct these items on the basis of a two-person psychology. So that's some of the theoretical background behind these items. So it's really not a therapist-driven instrument. It's not a patient-driven instrument. It's a dyadically-driven instrument. And some of the items are more child-focused, and other items are more therapist-focused, but they all are have the common goal of trying to identify interaction structures in and across psychotherapy sessions. All right, so I think that's a good place to stop. So we got up to item 16, right? So what I would strongly urge you guys to do is between this week and next week, really review the items, and we can talk about those items that seem particularly confusing or not clear. Because I don't know that we want to go through all 100 items in here before we start practicing. We can do that, but we didn't even get to 20 items there, which means, let's say we got to 20 items, that would take us 5 weeks just to get to reviewing all the items. I don't know that that's the best use of our time.
Could we have an example? Could we show a video and we could all try to show one of the YouTube videos? Maybe?
See, I wanted to wait until we actually reviewed all the items. Not, but see, I don't think we have to review all the items, but I would like to hear people bringing in questions about specific items that they're stumbling on in their understanding.
Yeah,
I do want to do that before we actually go to video.
I think that makes sense, because I think I'd also like time afterwards, because I realized with the cue sort that it was the process itself where I'd be sitting there thinking, oh, come on, where exactly do I put this card?
Yeah.
That helped illuminate some of those differences that I wouldn't have otherwise thought about had I just read it. So there can just be a little bit of time for that as well. Questions after we start.
Oh, well, after we start looking at video, we're going to be, everybody's going to be asking questions. I mean, that's going to go throughout until the end of December. What?
Great. I was going to say before we test for reliability. Because I think it's going to
No, testing for reliability is going to happen until probably December or so. That's,
so we're starting this while we're doing this.
Yes, I had this conversation with Julia just at the beginning that when I start handing out practice videos to code, the transcribing is going to diminish. Because you guys owe me only 6 hours a week.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
The maximum.
Sorry, I didn't realize what that conclusion had been. I thought it was like a possibility. I didn't know.
No, it's not even a possibility. It's not even a probability. It's a certainty.
Yeah.
There's no way that you can do 6 hours of transcribing and then code another video.
Yeah.
That then you're going over your 6 hour limit.
Yeah, for some reason I thought we were starting this next semester.
No. Well, the coding next semester, but we got to practice for reliability, and that's going to happen this semester.
Yeah. Does
All right.
anybody want that dissertation? I didn't find it. You don't have to have it. Thank you.
You can send it to me. I have a hard copy, but if you want to send me the electronic, that'd be great.
Can I send it to you, and then you can send it out?
Sure. Thank you.
I got to go with my ride.
All right.
Have a good weekend.
See you.
No, you're a little
happy.
I'm
a
little
happy. Okay. So I've been having troubles with my work study. They still put me in the system.
You're not in the system yet?
No, she didn't put me in, so that means this past Thursday I didn't get paid. They gave me like a whole month. She was really not like...
Is there anything I can do?
No, it was hard. She had all my paperwork under a list, under a pile of papers, and I was just like, okay, well... I need to get this signed, and this is next week. The whole thing of getting it to her on time.
Yeah. You have a pen?
Yeah.
I'll sign whatever
she
you want me to
like
sign.
Have an initial
oh my
set
gosh. So that's what you were doing.
I like doing two things at once. I focus more that way. So I left comments.
You know, I don't know if I can read these.
I have no idea. I can read it to the meeting on Tuesday, though.
Okay.
But I figured it would help.
Yeah, now, I mean, am I on the right track?
So I think it.
So this is called a. Have you heard something called a concept note?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, definitely. So this is going to be part of a concept note. It's okay. I just wrote this afternoon, and I wanted to. But coming from Verdelli's lab, I thought I would give it to you. I was going to send it to Verdelli, but I wanted to send it to you first, so I don't look like a jerk to her.
I know it better than most. Yeah, I spent like a good.
You know it better than Verdelli.
I'm not better than Verdelli. I spent a good 3 years with her. It's nice.
How many years was it?
I was studying with her for 2 years, worked with her for 3 years.
Wow.
And then worked with Paul Tolton and Vitsa Toll, the Hopkins
people. Yeah.
And then with Shay Karsaksina, who's the WHO guy. So.
All right. So you are the. We'll talk more on Tuesday.
Okay.
I'm trying to find a system to like get ahead of it with her.
Yeah.
I only see you on Thursdays.
Right.
Do Mondays.
I'm here on Tuesdays.
Yeah, so I think I'm
up there. Or I could just sign ahead of time. Actually, I don't know. You can change the date if you want.
I don't think she really cares. I just think she wants me to hand it to her before she has to put them on the system or else she'll forget about me. And I think that's her issue, that I bring them a little later in the week.
Yeah.
And she forgets about me. So, we'll figure it out.
That's sad.
Thank you.
I just wanted to thank you for inviting me.
So how was it? Was it okay for you?
Yeah,
was it...
totally. It's nice because nobody else is really. I mean, Dr. Proud is. Well, she's not in the. Like, I only talk to her weekly, and it's in a lab meeting, so I feel kind of isolated. So it's nice to come here and have people looking at this with me.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's in the same boat as you. Most of these folks have some experience Q-sorting, but using a different Q-sort called the CCQ.
Mm-hmm.
But no one has ever used, in this group, no one has ever used this instrument. All the people I trained before on the papers I published
mm-hmm.
have since graduated.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, they're doing their own thing now. So I'm training a whole new batch of folks. And so you're, you know, on the ground floor. I would go back and listen to the podcast from last week.
I will. And I also wanted to remind you, I mentioned in my email that I can't make next week.
Right. And, you know, I totally forgot. I can't make next week. So I have to send out an email message to everybody.
Okay.
I'm not going to be able to make it next week. I was invited by my wife to attend this black tie dinner at St. John's. She's a dean at St. John's.
Oh.
And so I'm going to that. And I have to run in tux and the whole thing. So
I can't really read whether... You're dreading it? Okay.
Dreading it.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's fun hanging out with my wife and seeing who her coworkers
mm-hmm.
are. She just started this job.
Okay.
You know, wearing a monkey suit and that whole thing is just not me. So, you know, I'm not really, I'd rather be here actually, but I can't make it next week. So it's fortuitous that you can't make it either.
Yeah, that's great.
So then we'll resume in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks again.
Yeah, sure. And if you have any questions, just feel free to email me in the meantime.
Okay, thanks.
But, you know, review the items.
I will.
And I'm sure you've already done that. I don't know how much.
I have, but I haven't used it. So it's like,
you
know, reading through it is, you know, it's not going to stick in
right.
the same way as discussing it or actually coding.
Right.
So.
I think I'm hearing that from the rest of the group, too.
Yeah, I understand also what you're saying, but I do think that, like, there's no, like, actually having material
right.
to discuss
right.
is really helpful. But
right.
we'll get there.
That's why I didn't want to spend the next 5 weeks just
totally.
Going through the mechanically going through the items. But I do want to spend, like, maybe one more session just having people actually bring up specific questions about specific items. And then once we've taken care of that, then we can like
mm-hmm.
look at an actual video together and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, great.
Thank you.
All right, sure. You know how to get out of here?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now that it's dark,
well,
you give it a try.
Follow the road.
Well, just
like
go out of the parking lot,
turn
right, and just keep going straight until you get to the gate. And to get to the LIU, you turn left onto Northern Boulevard. And then I guess you know how to get back from there.
Yeah.
Right. And then left
on
Glen Cove Road.
GPS.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'd be lost without it.
All right, thanks.